this Wednesday, September 7th. VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple grammar and a limited vocabulary. Today on the program, Brian Lynn brings us the Science and Technology Report. We also have a Labor Day story coming up from Ashley Thompson. And we close out the show with the Learning English series, American Presidents. Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of George W. Bush. But first, the world is full of tea drinkers. For many, they simply enjoy the taste. But new research suggests tea might help those who drink it live longer than those who do not. Tea is known to contain helpful substances known to reduce inflammation. Past studies in China and Japan, where green tea is popular, have suggested several health benefits. Now scientists say black tea may show similar benefits. Scientists from the United States National Cancer Institute carried out the study. They examined years of data gathered about the tea drinking behavior of almost 500,000 adults in Britain for as many as 14 years. Black tea is the most common kind of tea in Britain. The researchers adjusted for risks that individuals may have related to health, living conditions, diet and lifestyle choices, as well as age, race, and gender. The study found that high tea intake, 2 or more cups a day, was linked to a moderate benefit. A 9 to 13% lower risk of death from any cause than non-tea drinkers. The research was published in Annals of Internal Medicine. The scientists say the lowered risk of death held true for study subjects with heart disease. However, researchers said there was no clear finding in connection with deaths from cancer. Researchers were not sure why, but it is possible there were too few confirmed cancer deaths to measure, said Maki Inoue Choi, who led the study. All kinds of tea, green, black, oolong, and white, are produced from the Camellia sinensis plant using different methods. Tea contains various elements, including polyphenols. Experts at the U.S. National Institutes of Health say polyphenols are thought to be responsible for the health benefits that have traditionally been linked to tea, especially green tea. Green tea is reported to improve mental ability, ease digestive problems and head pain, and help people with weight loss. Green tea has also been studied for possible protective effects against heart disease and cancer. The study of British tea drinkers was based on observing people's behaviors and health. This kind of methodology cannot prove cause and effect. Observational studies like this always raise the question, is there something else about tea drinkers that makes them healthier? Said Marion Nessel. She is a professor of food studies at New York University. The study does not offer enough evidence to advise people to change their tea behaviors, said Inoue Choi. If you drink one cup a day already, I think that is good, she said. And please, enjoy your cup of tea.
Americans celebrate Labor Day this year on September 5th. The national holiday began more than 100 years ago to honor low-paid factory workers. Labor Day also informally marks the end of summer. Many students return to school after Labor Day. The hot days of summer turn cooler. Many Americans celebrate the holiday with an outdoor family barbecue. But Labor Day started with a struggle. On May 1, 1889, workers demonstrated on the streets of Paris, France. International Labor Day was born. Most industrialized countries in the world, except the United States and Canada, celebrate Labor Day on the 1st of May. The first American Labor Day celebration was held on September 5, 1882, in New York City. About 10,000 workers marched through the streets to show the strength of labor organizations. For many years after that, American workers used the first Monday in September to demand better working conditions and pay. Music was a part of many of those marches. Labor songs traditionally tell stories of conflict and hopes for a better life. Here is Pete Seeger's We Shall Not Be Moved. Many classic American labor songs came from workers in the coal mines of the South. Mine owners bitterly opposed workers' unions. In Kentucky, company police searched for union leaders. They waited outside a worker's home for several days to block him from organizing. The coal miner's wife, Florence Reese, stayed inside with her children. She wrote this song, Which Side Are You On? Here is Natalie Merchant singing the song.
How the good old union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side?
Another American labor song is called Bread and Roses. It is based on a poem by James Oppenheim, published in December of 1911. The poem speaks about the women's labor movement. At that time, conditions in factories, where many women worked, were horrible. A fire at a clothing factory in New York killed 146 people. Most of the victims were immigrant women. A month after Oppenheim's poem was published, textile workers in Lawrence, Massachusetts, went on strike. Their protest won them higher pay and better working conditions. Oppenheim's poem gained more attention. Here is Judy Collins singing Bread and Roses. Even though Labor Day demonstrations are not as common in the U.S. today, the song reminds us to celebrate the effort and love that many people give to their work. I'm Ashley Thompson.
I shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses.
The newly deployed James Webb Space Telescope has discovered the first clear evidence of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere of a planet outside our solar system. The American Space Agency, NASA, confirmed the evidence, which it said was discovered in the atmosphere of a planet orbiting a star about 700 light-years from Earth. Planets that orbit a star outside our solar system are called exoplanets. NASA said the exoplanet where the carbon dioxide was found or detected is a hot gas planet. It was discovered in 2011 and is called WASP-39b. The exoplanet, which has a mass about the same as Saturn's, stays around 900 degrees Celsius. It remains hot because it orbits very close to its star. The space agency said the Hubble and Spitzer space telescopes have made observations of WASP-39b in the past. Those observations suggested the presence of water vapor, sodium, and potassium in the exoplanet's atmosphere. But now the presence of carbon dioxide has also been confirmed in its atmosphere. NASA said the Webb telescope was able to make the discovery because of its unusual technical abilities. Researchers recently described the discovery in a paper published online. A detailed study about the findings is to appear in an upcoming issue of the publication Nature. NASA has described Webb as the largest and most powerful space science telescope ever built. It is a joint partnership between NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Canadian Space Agency. Webb is designed to gather more data and explore parts of space that have never been observed before. In July, NASA released the first images captured by the Webb telescope. The images demonstrated Webb's ability to collect data on distant objects and observe highly detailed elements of galaxies and exoplanets. NASA said a sensitive infrared instrument made it possible for the orbiting observatory to confirm the presence of carbon dioxide in WASP-39b's atmosphere. The instrument is called a near-infrared spectrograph, or NIRSPEC. NIRSPEC is designed to capture radiation in near-infrared wavelengths. Using this instrument, astronomers are able to produce a detailed map of some of the chemicals found in a planet's atmosphere, if conditions are right. This permits scientists to look for the presence of gases and other substances. Zafar Rustamkulov is a student at Johns Hopkins University and a member of the Webb's early release science team. He said in a statement that as soon as he saw the carbon dioxide data, he knew it was a major discovery. "It was a special moment, crossing an important threshold in exoplanet sciences." Natalie Batala of the University of California at Santa Cruz helped lead the team. She said, detecting such a clear signal of carbon dioxide on WASP-39b bodes well for the detection of atmospheres on smaller, terrestrial-sized planets. NASA said such discoveries are important because they help scientists better understand the makeup of a planet's atmosphere. This can provide valuable information about how planets formed and developed over time. Carbon dioxide molecules are sensitive tracers of the story of planet formation, said Mike Line of Arizona State University. He is another member of the research team. By measuring this carbon dioxide, we can determine how much solid versus how much gaseous material was used to form this gas giant planet. Line added that in coming years, the Webb telescope is expected to continue making similar discoveries. In doing so, scientists can gain insight into the details of how planets form and the uniqueness of our own solar system. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about George Walker Bush. He took office in 2001 as the 43rd president. He has a similar name to another president, his father, George Herbert Walker Bush. To simplify things, Americans sometimes call the younger Bush 43, or simply W. Here we will just call him Bush. Because Bush is a recent president, historians have not reached a broad agreement on his time as a leader. But he will surely be remembered for facing one of the biggest challenges to any president, the attacks against the U.S. on September 11, 2001. George Bush was born in the northeast state of Connecticut, but his parents soon moved to the southwest state of Texas. George grew up there and considered Texas home. The Bush family had a long background in politics. Bush's grandfather was a senator. His father held many public offices. In some ways, George was prepared for a career in politics, too. He went to the same private boarding school as his father. Then, like his father and grandfather, George went to Yale for college. He also worked on several political campaigns. But he said he did not consider pursuing politics. Instead, he earned a degree in business at Harvard and took a job in an oil company in Texas. In time, he founded his own oil business. And he married Laura Welch, who was a teacher and librarian in their hometown. They had twin daughters named Barbara and Jenna. In these years as a young adult, Bush began to make some changes. He began attending a Christian church regularly. he decided to stop drinking alcohol because it was creating problems in his personal life, and he turned his attention to politics. Bush lost the first election in which he competed, a race to become a member of Congress. So, for a while, he focused on business investments and helping his father's political career. But in 1992, his father lost re-election to the presidency, and the younger Bush saw a chance to enter politics himself again. In 1994, Bush ran for governor of Texas. To many people's surprise, he won. 4 years later, he was overwhelmingly re-elected. Many voters liked his image as what he called a compassionate conservative. In other words, he wanted to use traditional Republican ideas about government to help society. Following two successful terms as governor, Bush turned his attention to the presidency. In 2000, he competed against the vice president at the time, Al Gore. The winner was not announced until more than a month following the election. Usually, the winner is announced within hours. Both sides disputed the process of counting votes in the state of Florida. Finally, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on the process. The court ordered state officials to stop recounting votes. Bush's lead stood. Bush entered office expecting to bring many of the ideas he pursued in Texas to the entire nation. For example, as president, he permitted religious groups to receive government funding and set national standards for public schools. These moves were popular with many voters, but they also challenged some American traditions. The separation of church and state and the ability of public schools to govern themselves. For many presidents, these policies might have created a legacy. But early in Bush's term, he faced a crisis that defined much of his time in office. Hijackers linked to the Al-Qaeda group seized four airplanes on September 11, 2001. They purposely crashed two planes into the twin towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, eventually killing more than 2,700 people. Another plane was flown into the Pentagon, the country's military headquarters outside of Washington, D.C. About 200 people died there. The fourth plane was aimed at another important target. But passengers fought the hijackers. The plane lost control and crashed in a field in Pennsylvania. All 44 people on board died there. President Bush was visiting an elementary school in Florida that morning. He learned about the attacks while he was reading with the children. At the end of the day, Bush spoke to the nation. He said, "The U.S. would answer both the terrorist groups and the countries that permitted terrorist groups to thrive." Over the next years, Bush took a number of actions to create a new national security strategy. They included creating a Department of Homeland Security, making changes to the country's intelligence operations, and reforming the U.S. military. He also sent U.S. forces into Afghanistan to destroy terrorist networks there. Bush was especially targeting the person who had designed the September 11 terrorist attacks, Osama bin Laden. The struggle in Afghanistan was successful at first, but continued throughout Bush's time in office. And bin Laden was not captured while Bush was president. In 2003, Bush opened another front on what some called the War on Terror. He and other government officials said the leader of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, was developing weapons that could kill many people. They said Hussein and his connections to terrorist groups threatened Americans and people in other countries. Hussein did not agree to leave Iraq, so U.S. and British forces launched bombs at targets in the country's capital. Additional troops destroyed what was left of the targets. Hussein was quickly overthrown. But the weapons of mass destruction were not found. For the rest of Bush's presidency, U.S. forces remained in Iraq. Bush promised that Americans would stabilize the country and help Iraqis create a democratic government. The presidency of George W. Bush is too recent to understand its impact. But there is some evidence of the public's reaction at the time. Bush received some of the highest ratings of any president. In the weeks following the September 11 attacks, 90% approved of his leadership. He was re-elected in 2004. But his popularity steadily decreased. At the end of his second term, he had one of the lowest public approval ratings of any president, 33%. The U.S. economy had entered a recession. More Americans disagreed, especially with his decision to invade Iraq. And some criticized his government for responding too slowly after Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans and the country's Gulf Coast. Since Bush left the White House in 2009, his approval ratings have, like those of many presidents, risen again. He has mostly avoided public appearances. Instead, he has enjoyed playing sports, helping charities, and reading U.S. history. He also began a new hobby, painting. He has created portraits of dozens of veterans to honor their service in the military. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.